Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're going to take a look at wetlands and wetland legislation on the program now. Our guest, Katie Belfast, who is with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's the Outreach Programs Director. Katie, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
And Aaron O'Brien, the organization's policy director. And Aaron, good to have you back as well. It's been a while.
Yes, good morning.
Nice to have you back. So, we'll talk wetlands. Why are wetlands important to you? Questions about wetlands? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And, well, let's talk about some of the wetlands legislation that recently has come up regarding hydrologic restoration. Aaron, maybe we turn to you for this. First, what is hydrologic restoration?
Yeah, thank you. So essentially, hydrologic restoration aims to reestablish the landscape's natural capacity to manage water. So in a restoration context, we're really talking about reestablishing upper watershed wetlands for the storage they provide when rain and snowmelt comes, and also looking at stream connections to their floodplains and making sure we have good, healthy floodplain functions, again, to process, manage, store, and cleanse water.
So essentially, it's kind of mitigate flooding in to some degree.
To a large degree, but it also does all these other wonderful things to habitat and improving water quality, et cetera.
Yeah. How will it be set up? Can you explain what's going on with it?
Sure, yeah. I'll start by describing the problem, which is that across the state, in almost all of our communities, we have what we would describe as degraded hydrology. So the functions that our wetlands and our streams and our floodplains used to provide have been compromised in some way because of historic land uses or current practices. And so we see things like wetlands that are being inadvertently drained by drainage or eroded stream banks and eroded floodplain channels, et cetera. And so the goal here is to accelerate a conversation and accelerate implementation of these kinds of restoration practices. And there are two different bills moving through the legislature right now with bipartisan support. One is SB 252, AB 266, and that is to support demonstration projects up in Ashland County, which is a community where a lot of good wetland assessment and planning work is going on to address flooding, to demonstrate techniques, upper watershed restoration techniques that can be used to reestablish that storage and protect vulnerable infrastructure. And as we know, those communities, like so many across the state, have been hit hard by storms, and we've seen a lot of road and culvert washouts. And so we're looking to help communities implement cost-effective solutions to protecting that infrastructure and improving their hydrologic systems in the process. The second bill, SB 631 AB 701, is really designed to promote better integration of hydrologic restoration in state-sponsored programs and to make it easier to have the review and approval of those projects move forward. And so it does two things. It directs the Department of Natural Resources to create a general permit for hydrologic restoration activities of the kind we've already described. And it creates, and this is probably more importantly, a Hydrologic Restoration and Management Advisory Council, which would be a technical working group of federal, state, local agencies, and private sector experts to get together and say, we need to really be looking at fixing our hydrology to solve all these problems. How can we do that in a more strategic and integrated way across our state programs and with the support of our private sector experts?
So there's a lot.
Yes.
A lot going on there.
Yeah. It's all very excited. It's a conversation that's really urgently needed because of the problems we're experiencing. So the timing is ripe, and there's a lot of excitement among our partners and other agencies to have this conversation. I'll also note that both of these bills are moving forward with really strong bipartisan support, and that's just
great.
Lovely to see right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there the permitting process? Is there a permitting process we have a process right now. Is that going to change or is that?
Yeah, it's going to make things a little bit easier. I mean, the thing that's interesting about our permit processes is that they're really designed to prevent harm, and that's very important, right? And because of that, though, the the process that one must go through is really designed with development concerns in mind. Mm-hmm. And so restoration projects are unique in that they're intended to do good. And so maybe the information needs that are required are different, and maybe the way the projects are evaluated can be different. And so, you know, regulatory approval processes can drive what kinds of practices are implemented on the ground. So if it's a longer process, a shorter process, a more expensive or a less expensive process. And so what the bill seeks to do is just to say, hey, we really want to prioritize these kinds of projects. So let's get folks together and talk about how to create a simplified process for the review and approval of those projects so we see more good applications and more projects implemented.
What about the costs associated with, is there money that will be available, or is it in part of the bill in some ways to support the whole process of restoring, of restoration?
Well, the money available is through the prior legislation I described, okay, which has funding for demonstration projects. The other bill doesn't have an appropriation attached to it, but the conversation that the council will engage in will certainly, we hope anyway, be looking at how can we better support these kinds of projects through existing funding streams, and what might we recommend to policymakers to increase investments to see more of this kind of restoration happening.
Yeah.
One thing we've seen in talking with partners across the state is they're looking at a restoration project and they say, well, I'd really like to do it this way because that would be best for the stream or the river or the habitat, but I know that's going to be really hard to get permitted, and so I'm going to do it this way instead because it's going to be an easier process, even though their original idea is perhaps better in the long run. So we want to make sure that that great work happens, and we want to have folks who might not be thinking in that expansive way to have that come to the table for them so that they can realize that there's this approach that can help them solve so many problems at the same time.
Yeah. So the legislation, I assume there's public comments and there's all kinds of things that are going to be going on ahead of this.
Yeah, we're actually relatively far along in the process. So the bill related to the flood demonstration projects has cleared both of its committees, the Assembly and the Senate, with unanimous support, and has also been approved by the Senate by a full floor vote, also unanimous support. So that one just has to go to the Assembly for a floor vote. The other bill, the Hydrologic Restoration Council and General Permit Bill, has cleared its Senate committee, and the Assembly committee is slated to vote on it shortly, and then it will be ready for scheduling a floor vote. So it's clipping along nicely, and its prospects look quite good.
Talking about wetland legislation here at the moment with our two guests, Katie Balfus and Aaron O'Brien from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, you may have some comments about that legislation or about other things relating to wetlands, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Well, it's nice to see bipartisan support on something.
You know, healthy water is everybody's concern, and it's wonderful to see that support. And there, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, there's flooding problems happening all over the state. And so every legislator has a game, is part of the story, right? They've got constituents who are suffering and they're looking for solutions. So we've had really, Aaron and other folks on our staff have had really terrific conversations with members of the legislature on every side of the aisle, and everybody is getting it, and it's wonderful to see.
Yeah. And is that kind of your role in the Wetlands Association, to talk with people, try to educate legislators and others?
For sure. That's a key goal that we do. We find that wetlands are sort of the forgotten stepchild sometimes, and they're so connected to other resources like rivers and lakes that are obviously on everybody's agenda as important. And wetlands are part of that water system. All waters are connected. So our organization does feel it's our role to get out and help not only legislators, but lots of different folks in different positions, county governments, town governments, to help them see what they can do within the context of the issues that matter to them to protect wetlands.
I think it's come to the fore a little bit more here in recent years with all this terrible weather that we've had, where you've had wetlands. I can think of Texas and Louisiana come to mind as a couple of places where there were just tremendous flooding, in part because many wetlands had been paved over for subdivisions and so forth, and then the water had no place to go.
Larry, you hit the nail on the head, as usual. That's exactly right. Wetland loss comes at a cost, and as our weather systems get perhaps stronger and more intense, we need wetlands more than ever to help us manage all that water.
Yeah, good to hear. Rick in Oconomowoc, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. As we're in western Waukesha County, and as the farmlands and the wetlands become more subject to development, there's oftentimes talk of trading off. Gee, we need that swamp drain. We need to fill that in because this, our plans say the building's got to go 50 feet one way or another. What's the position of the council on this sort of thing?
So,
Aaron, let's go to you.
Yeah, thank you. The council that we talked about is still a proposal that will hopefully become a reality when it moves through the legislative process. But I'll say this, the situation you're describing is something that exists in our current regulatory program. So if you have a development proposal that would involve some wetland fill, it comes with a requirement to restore wetlands elsewhere in the watershed or a nearby area to offset those losses. And that is a practice that's been in part of state and federal law for some time. There are certainly questions about whether it's a fair trade, and it depends on the context, right? Not all wetlands are replaceable, but some restoration can do really good things. And so what we're really aiming for in advance is good land use planning so that we're looking at where development should happen and where wetland protection or restoration is needed. And seeing these kinds of projects move forward with those considerations in mind is the best thing to do.
And, you know, if we have legislation that clearly delineates certain areas, wetland areas or whatnot, I think it's a little easier on the commercial side, let's say the builder's side, then if they know there's an area here that, okay, we're not going to get that.
Plus, as you pointed out, Larry, the water knows where it wants to go. And even if we fill an area, there still is water, right? And so
somewhere.
Somebody developing a building doesn't want to put their wetland, their building in a wetland because it's going to have problems, right? So I think you're exactly right. We're looking for the win-win of recognizing that development is important and needs to go forward and recognizing that the needs of the community, flood protection, clean water, can be assisted by protecting and restoring wetlands.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate the call. Let's go to John in Lake Halley. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been hearing all of this talk about these groups that are going to be political or for corporations to make these decisions. Where are the scientists involved?
Well, I think you may. Well, maybe we need to go back, Aaron, and talk about who would be the people making the kinds. I mean, not the specific names, but who are the types of people who are involved in this process once the legislation, assuming it's passed.
Sure, thank you. So, on the flood demonstration project bill, that one will very much be those projects will be planned, designed, and implemented with folks involved that have hydrologic restoration expertise. And we are a science-based organization, so you can count us among the scientists or part of the scientific community that supports these bills. But they are but the principles that we're promoting, hydrologic restoration and assessment, are well supported in the hydrologic science and the literature on the connectivity of our waters. The advisory council that's supported by the other bill would also, it's really a technical advisory team, and so it would be experts from federal and state agencies, county land and water management professionals, private sector consultants that have expertise in hydrologic engineering. So we think we've got the right folks with the right expertise at the table. But there's always room for more,
It's so important to have a two-way street there too, right? The scientists, especially university-based scientists, have research that they're interested in doing, and the communities have questions that they need answers to. And yeah. we need to make sure those folks are talking to each other so that the researchers are investigating the needs of the communities and the communities can inform the research. So great job. And, you know, hopefully the council will really help make those connections. Yeah.
John, does that help?
I think so.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Katie Balfus and Aaron O'Brien from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. You can join in with your own questions or comments. We've talked legislation primarily here, but we can deal with other issues relating to wetlands as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at wetlands and wetland legislation here in Wisconsin with our two guests from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, Katie Balfus and Aaron O'Brien. Great to have them along. Questions for them, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, our last caller may have had in mind some of the we've been talking about state legislation, and he may have had in mind federal legislation where sounds like maybe a different animal.
Yeah, that's right, Larry. There is a proposal out by the Trump administration to really fundamentally change what waters are protected under the Clean Water Act. And that proposal is actually moving forward contrary to a very large body of literature that supports inclusion of geographically isolated wetlands and upper watershed ephemeral streams under coverage for federal Clean Water Act protections. So there is definitely dispute by the scientists on the policies moving forward at the federal level.
Yeah. Jess in Viroqua, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jess.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I was just really wondering if there's flood mitigation planning going on with this program, like for the Kickapoo River that's been, you know, out of its banks more than in, it seems.
Yeah. All right, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks for your call. And we're well aware of the challenges and problems in the Driftless area overall, and particularly Vernon County and the Viroqua area. And the answer is that there's definitely mitigation planning going on. Right now in the state, it doesn't always or even often include consideration of sort of watershed scale hydrology. And that's something we're really trying to address through these bills and a lot of the program work we do through the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. So that means trying to help communities understand how those degraded hydrologic conditions are contributing to the circumstances you're seeing. And in fact, we are working with Vernon County Land Conservation Department to try to get some assessment and restoration projects going in your area. So please stay tuned. We are aware you're out there and need help, and we're looking to collaborate to try to bring some resources your way.
And Katie, you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, so we were talking earlier about our role as an educator about these issues, and I just wanted to share with your audience that we produced a really short, 3-minute long video. It's a whiteboard explainer video about watersheds and how wetlands connect to those and what their functions are in the watershed. And we have found it to be an incredibly useful tool in talking with community groups and with decision makers. And so if there's folks who are interested in viewing that, we have it on our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. You'll see the videos right front and center on the website, and it's the how wetlands help manage water video. It's a great tool for bringing to your local elected officials and decision makers to help explain it to them as well.
Yeah, with a restoration, you know, we're talking restoration. What is a restoration? You know, what would be a project or a kind of project that would be a restoration project?
Well, I think
I know you've done many of them, so maybe an example to give people an idea.
Sure. Well, and I think the shift here is not looking only at habitat, but looking at function. And there are places where we have seen wetlands on the landscape, but we have seen such erosion in the stream that might be the outflow from that wetland, that stream is actually functionally draining the wetland, even though it's a stream, but the water flow is so strong that it's eroded that. And so a restoration there is what can we do in that stream corridor to build that stream back up and get take that incision what happens as a result of that incision, help that so that the wetland is doing what it is meant to be doing, which is hold on to the water. Right now that water is draining out. So that's one example.
Well, that's a good example. Thank you. John in Madison, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I was wondering if I could join your organization or volunteer, and if I could, how could I go about doing that?
Oh, we would welcome you and anybody else who's listening today that would like to become a member of our organization. Our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, is the place where you can do that. There's a donate button right on there, and that makes you a member of our organization. And we are grateful for your support as a nonprofit. That's what helps keeps our lights on and enables us to do the work that we do. So thank you so much. We welcome you.
Do you work with volunteers as well?
We do sometimes have volunteer. Because we don't own or manage land, we don't have a resource base. So we don't have volunteer days to invite folks to. But there are opportunities, particularly if there are folks out there with sort of technical skill sets that they can contribute to our decision-making and learning opportunities. So, you know, give us a call and we can talk about it.
Yeah, there you go, John. Thanks so much for calling. Tom in Sauk County, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hey. I live on the Scotts River here, and over the years, it's been passed down through the family, but now I'm losing a lot of riverbank, and it's pretty expensive to bring in riprap and stuff. And if you're living on a pension and stuff, my neighbor said he's going to spend about $18,000 to get his bank fixed, but mine, there's no way. Is there any kind of a program or grants I can get?
Yeah. So, Katie, we'll start with you.
Sure. There are programs, particularly through your local county conservation office, or they can connect you with federal programs that can do cost share for certain kinds of projects. It depends on exactly what's happening and where it is and what funding is available, but there's certainly good people at your county office who can help you out with that. There's also a group of biologists called the Farm Bill Biologists. There's one that serves each county in Wisconsin, and those folks are really helpful as well. So if you type in Farm Bill Biologist Wisconsin in your search engine, you could be able to get a list of those folks too, and great resources for information.
Otherwise, go ahead.
Well, I would also just add, there's also a lot of conservation groups, non-governmental groups like Trout Unlimited and Ducks Unlimited that work with private landowners to do restoration on their property. And so sometimes they are a good inroad to some of the program funding. Tom, you're welcome to call our office and get some referrals for your area if that's helpful to you.
Yeah, and he can do that. Just go to your Wisconsin Wetlands Association website. Mm-hmm. Your phone number there, contacts, and all that's right there.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. So there you go, Tom. Appreciate your call very much. Sounds like there could be some good help out there.
Yeah. If I may add, I'll also say that it is expensive for a private landowner to do this work, especially riprap, which is expensive and doesn't always hold. You know, it depends on what comes down the pike with the next storm. And that's one of the things we're really working to do, is to figure out how to bring more resources to private landowners, because all the restoration has to happen on private lands. And more support through our government programs to help folks like your caller.
And I think it's a good example, too, of he wants to solve his problem on his property, of course. But perhaps some of the reason for his problem is what's going on upstream from him. And so solving it on his parcel doesn't necessarily, it's not a long-term solution, as Aaron pointed out. And so that's really why we're looking at these watershed approaches, so that we can help landowners like him look in the context of the watershed in which his property resides, because maybe there's work that can be done upstream to solve his problem downstream.
Yeah, that makes good sense. And I know a lot of this is going to be discussed at your annual Wetlands Science Conference.
Coming right up, 20 days. I checked the calendar today.
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, this is our 25th annual conference. It's a two-and-a-half-day conference that invites anybody who's interested in wetlands, primarily folks who work with wetlands and water professionally, but we welcome other folks as well. And we have a Wetlands 101 session this year that's new. We also have a great banquet speaker coming this year. And even if you don't attend the banquet, you're most welcome. Even if you don't attend the conference, we hope that you'll come to the banquet. Ben Goldfarb, who's the author of that great book, Eager, about the role of beavers on our landscape. It's a beautiful book if you haven't read it.
Interviewed him.
I heard. And so Ben will be our banquet speaker. That's Wednesday, the 19th of February. The whole conference is happening at the Ostoff Resort in Elkhart Lake. And anybody who's interested is welcome to join. We've got workshops. We've got field trips, lots of great stuff on the agenda.
And you work, you kind of move that around every year.
We do indeed, so that it can be convenient to different groups of people and so that we can showcase different wetlands around the state through our field trips.
And I think Ben's even on some sort of additional, aside from his speaking.
Indeed, we're having a special book group session with him so that folks who have enjoyed reading his book have an opportunity to chat with him a little bit more about what he learned and what they can do with that information and what motivated him.
Give me an example of a couple of the topics that are going to be covered.
Sure. Well, we'll have talks about how wetlands contribute to water quality and ways of measuring and figuring out where water quality problems are coming from. There's presentations about cool new techniques for monitoring frogs using speakers that you can put up remotely and record the sound so that it's not dependent on somebody being able to get out to someplace X number of times a year. You can do it with speakers, remote speakers. Lots of great stuff. We have a really great training, a full-day training that's talking about the importance of looking at things like soil and local climate when you're planning management activities to make sure that your plans are going to work with what the conditions are. That sold out in the first week, so there's clearly demand for that one, and we'll hope to bring that back at a future conference to have more folks come in.
Jeff emailed. By the way, you can join in, too, with your questions or comments. Email us like Jeff did at ideas@WPR.org, or you can phone in with your questions, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Jeff emailed that as more and more of the smaller farms are being converted to larger farms, more and more drainage tiles have been put in, which allows groundwater to flow downstream quickly, and that can create flooding problems downstream, plus not allowing the replenishment of water tables.
Yeah, we've been increasing our work with the agricultural community because they have a vested interest in keeping wetlands on the landscape, too. They have an interest in groundwater for irrigation purposes. And if the water is not able to replenish the groundwater, they don't have that groundwater later in the year because it's all whooshed downstream. So it is a problem, but it is something that is solvable if we get the right people at the table together and use creative solutions that address the needs of the farming community and the needs of the downstream community and the folks that use the groundwater.
Yeah,
I just add that, I mean, Jeff's absolutely right. We need to be looking at the whole water budget, right? So it's the what are the effects of the drainage and the pumping and the development and our river systems and the health of those systems. And so it's important to look at all of those things as a whole system and look at your restoration and management interventions with that system in mind. But it is a problem that we're sending all of our water downstream early in the season and then not having it available for us later on when we need it in the summer.
So what are there other pieces of legislation that you're working on?
The two I've talked about are the main ones. I will say that there's a lot of really good proposals that I'm not so prepared to talk about here today that are moving in the name of water quality. Of course, there was that big initiative, the Water Quality Task Force, chaired by Representative Novak and Representative Shankland. And they, I think there's 10 or 12 different bills circulating around that will provide support for county-led efforts to improve water management, farmer-led efforts to improve water management, et cetera. So there's a lot of good information available on those bills, and I would encourage people to try to catch up and check them out.
Take a look at it. We've talked in the past about wetlands and the loss of wetlands. I don't remember the percentage.
We've lost half of our wetlands in Wisconsin. And we're lucky, you know, Illinois lost like 99%. And so we're doing better than they are. But it still is a big impact. And the loss is not uniform across the state. That we've had more significant losses in the southern part of our state than in the northern part of our state, because that's where our agriculture and cities have been larger and broader, and the kinds of, you know, the landscape is more conducive to those activities. So it's a big thing to crawl back from, right? Losing half of your wetlands. And so we have a big job ahead in terms of restoring, putting wetlands back on the landscape in order to provide the services that we value: flood control, water quality, and habitat. But, you know, we're really emphasizing those other things because wildlife habitat's been on the table for a while, and we want to make sure people are making the connection between wetlands and water quality and flooding as well.
Yeah. As you look at your organization, you've got, I think you might have even just mentioned the primary areas that you work and what you do in each of those areas as a group or as an organization.
Geographic areas or programmatic areas?
Programmatic areas.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Aaron runs up our policy programs, which is not only legislation, but also, initiatives to help programs and policies across the board, whether they're federal, state, or local, do more for wetlands. We have outreach programs for landowners, for local community governments, and lots of other options.
In terms of the legislation itself that we've been were you going to add some? I'm sorry. In terms of the legislation, what do you expect the timetable, Aaron, is going to be on this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the clock is ticking and the session is running short. The calendars, as they're set today, really just have a few more floor days in February and early March. So if if leadership sticks to that calendar, we should have answers about the bills that we're working on and many others real soon. Sessions get extended or special sessions get called. So it's always a little bit of a wild card. But really, by mid-spring, we're expecting to see definitive answers and bills reaching the governor's desk.
So the bills get there and the governor signs, I assume, and then do things get going pretty quickly?
Yeah. Well, we sure hope the governor will sign. Both of the bills that we've been working on are really ready to go. So work can begin almost immediately.
Well, that's good news.
Yes.
Well, I tell you what, this has been a lot of fun. I want to go back again to the Wetlands Conference for just a minute and go back over some of the things that people can still sign up or come.
Absolutely. And all the information is at conference.wisconsinwetlands.org. There's also a link from our main website, but we have a separate little conference microsite with all the details. We have a membership meeting that happens on Tuesday evening, the 18th, and that's open not only to our members, but anybody who's interested in learning more about our organization and the work that we do. So we hope you'll come on out to that. The conference kicks off in earnest on Wednesday morning, the 19th. The banquet is that evening. The conference registration is still open for another couple of weeks. And so if you're interested, please check out the website and registration is underway. So,
and what's the cost on that?
I suppose
it depends on how.
It depends on whether you're coming for one day or both days. But it's in the sort of $200 range. Let's just say that.
And you've got some field trips?
We do. We have three field trips this year. One is to the Sheboygan Marsh to talk about cattail management and partnerships there. We are exploring a wetland gem, the Nichols Creek State Wildlife Area. Wetland gems are sites that our organization has designated around the state to just help connect folks with the different kinds of wetlands that we have in Wisconsin and where, you know, they're all over the state of Wisconsin. You don't have to travel far to find a beautiful wetland.
Now, what's that? Why is it a gem?
Wetland gem. Well, that's just, we thought it was a pretty cool term. And our last trip, let's hope this snow is still on the ground by then, or come to the ground. We've hardly had any snow this year down south. Snowshoes and wetlands traversing the Kettle Moraine. So we're actually going to have snowshoes for everybody who goes on that one, and they can hike along the beautiful trails.
And if there's no snow,
they can go hiking. not as big of an adventure, but it's still cool.
Oh man! Well, that sounds wonderful. And I know there's a working group on tribal wetlands?
Yeah, this is I don't know if it's been 5 or 6 years that we've had this. It's a special working group for individuals who work in the tribal natural resources departments in the 11 tribes that are found within Wisconsin. And they get together and share ideas and learn new skills and techniques and talk about how they can support each other. Tribes are doing some really great cutting edge work. They're small acreages. I mean, overall, their land base is small, but they're doing some really important precedent-setting work. So,
And one area called wetland challenges, and I think we've probably been talking about that through the whole show.
There's a lot of wetland challenges. certainly invasive species is one that comes up a lot in that session. How do we take care of the fact that many of our wetlands are plagued by invasive species? So looking not only at sort of direct control techniques, but also invasive species tend to be a sort of scab, a sort of indicator of bigger problems. And so how do we look at those larger scale problems to try to diminish the ability of invasive species to take over, not just killing them, but also preventing their future invasion?
We've had some sort of success with some of them.
Yeah. I mean, purple loosestrife is a good
example. That's the one that came to my mind.
In the 80s, purple loosestrife, which is a beautiful purple flower.
Talked about that a lot then.
And it was very pervasive. And they came up with a biocontrol, a little beetle that you could release that only ate those plants and did not kill them, but reduced their ability to produce offspring. And so over time, it stressed the plant out enough that it really did reduce the prevalence of that species. We did see, and we've heard reports from all over the state, that purple loosestrife was a bigger piece of the landscape this summer than it has been recently. And one possible theory for that is that our super cold weather that we had last winter knocked out some of those beetles. So they weren't able to overwinter and then go back to work killing purple loosestrife the next year. So there's work to reintroduce those beetles in places where they might have been frozen out.
Get them back.
Yeah.
Let's get them back. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you both so much.
It's always fun.
And again, your website?
WisconsinWetlands.org.
Appreciate it very much. We'll look forward to another visit.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you both so much. Well, Katie Belfus is the Outreach Program Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, and Aaron O'Brien, Policy Director for that organization. Always fun to have them with us, and interesting to talk about what's going on. The legislation sounds really good. It's heartening to hear that we've got some bipartisan work going on, and that always warms my heart, as it does theirs.
Indeed.
And probably yours, too, as you listen in. Well, I've got something else that'll warm your heart coming up next, because there's a new book out. It's called Humanimal, Incredible Ways Animals Are Just Like Us. That next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.